Hello and welcome to this week's TES News Podcast. I'm Dave Speck and joining me is reporter Catherine Love. Catherine, hi.
Hi, hello.
We've got news editor Will Stewart. Will, hi.
Hello. We've
got reporter Amy Gibbons. Amy, hello.
Hello.
And reporter John Roberts. John, hi.
Hello.
And deputy news editor Mary Louise Clues. Mary Louise, hello.
Hello there.
Now, busy week of news, as ever. John, can I start with you about this primary school in London, which was which shut down after a visit from an Ofsted inspector who tested positive for COVID. That's a story you've worked on, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. As you say, kind of a story that's incredible and not surprising at the same time, I think. What we know is that a Ofsted inspector went on one of these visits that they've been doing this term, subsequently tested positive for COVID-19, and that following that, the school has taken the decision to close down. And I think that's because when these visits happen, the inspector spends their bulk of the time with the senior leadership team. And if the senior leadership team have then been exposed to COVID and they have to be off, can a school stay open? It's there's been a big debate about what Ofsted should do during the pandemic and how practical these visits are. But yeah, I think it's kind of astonishing that it's happened. But at the same time, given what we're seeing with COVID in the country, not surprising at all, if that makes sense.
There was quite a big backlash as well, wasn't there, John, when we put it out sort of on social media? Lots of people really upset to see that it happened. But again, echoing what you sort of said, and that it's not massively, for a lot of people, not massively surprising. And people, a lot of people saying they were disappointed, but not shocked by it. So, it was it certainly provoked a lot of discussion. And it came on the same day, didn't it, John, that you'd done another story about how heads are calling for the visits to move online. And that sort of tied in quite well, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
I read that, John, and I read that story that you were, and I thought, how can an Ofsted inspection possibly take place online? I mean, it would miss so much.
Well, the thing is...
It's not an inspection, though.
That's the point, I think. I think you're right, Dave, that if it was a full inspection, that couldn't be done online. But to kind of pull together everything that's just been said there by Amy and Willie yourself, the two things there are, Askell have asked for these things to move online, given the COVID situation. And these visits are basically a HMI going in and talking to the school leadership team, and that's about it, really. The school can bring in kids or trustees if they want, but and the second thing is, as Amy said, online, there's loads of people saying, we told you so. And if we go back to August, we had a story where both of these things were spelled out. We revealed that HMI had concerns that they could be, in one inspector's word, a typhoid Mary, unwittingly spreading the virus from school to school. But also we revealed that in a kind of internal sort of Q&A with Amanda Spielman, the chief inspector, that they'd asked, you know, given that this is the spec, why aren't we doing this just remotely like we are now and like most of the world has functioned in 2020? And I think that was a good question then, and it's an overwhelmingly powerful question for Ofsted to answer now.
And from what I just thought that tied it all together. You've done, you know, so many exclusives on this, John, and it just shows what a shocking situation it is now. Because back then, the senior inspectors were saying, that basically we get no answer, you know, why can't we do it online? And there was no answer to that. And then this week, going to Ofsted for a response to Askell saying, why can't you move them online? And again, there was no answer. They had absolutely no comment to make. And little more once the school's been closed down. So it's a bit of a vacuum, really, isn't it? I think in terms of what they're saying about it.
When we're talking about a return of full inspections, to be this January. Askell are also saying that this would be unthinkable, aren't they, John? Is another one of yours?
Yes, and it all ties in, I think. Essentially, the decision was taken before the school year started that January was the provisional date for them to go back, and that's still the case. We had an update basically saying that at the moment the plan is for full Ofsted inspections to kick into gear in January, but that's under review. What Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of Askell, has said is that that's now literally unthinkable. Like, given where we are, given the amount of closures that schools are facing, given the COVID disruption that obviously isn't going in any direction other than up, and that's going to continue. that not only is it impractical, but what are they actually going to be inspecting? You know, are they going to be using their existing framework? You know, and one thing that DfE said to us is that the inspectors will take into account the enormous challenge of COVID. And so we've asked Ofsted how, and we haven't had any response to that. But Askell's point is basically that we're now at the position where this is unthinkable. And I think as well, there's a sense of real frustration among schools that we've still got this kind of holding position, which was the holding position in August, is still the holding position in October. And effectively, what are they waiting for? You know, it's unthinkable. And I think that's a personal opinion. I think everyone in the school sector feels the same. It's like
holding position on everything, isn't it? Holding position on exams. Like, well, sorry, I shouldn't preempt it, but we're going to come on to that in a minute. But things obviously aren't going to work out as expected. So schools need to know what's going to happen, and schools need to know about Austin, and they can stop worrying about it.
John, do you think there's any credence, or anyone, do you think there's any credence to the sort of claims that people are saying that it's to do with justifying statutory existence in terms of kind of actually going to schools and writing letters afterwards and kind of fulfilling their kind of statutory role there?
I mean, that's one of the things that's been, in a way, Ofsted have faced fire in both directions. They've had people accusing them of trying to find a role for themselves or wanting to be seen to be needed. Equally, during the lockdown, they've had MPs saying, what were you doing all that time? You went into hibernation mode. I think from Ofsted's point of view, they thought their visits were a way of helping. And I think, to be fair to Ofsted, the bulk of the reaction I've seen from schools that have had these visits has been quite positive. I think school leaders have welcomed the chance to talk to someone about what they've been through. So there is a small positive, positive for them there. But I think now there's this thing about, you know, now that we've got a situation where an inspector's tested positive, you've got to just balance that off against the risk of these visits. And it was, as we've said, it was a knowable and an avoidable risk. But yeah, I think Ofsted's in a difficult position in that it's been criticised in both directions for doing too much and too little.
It's not just Ofsted's call, though, is it? From your story, it sounds like in the end, as is always the way, if the DfE wants something to happen, then...
Yeah, and I think this is probably why we haven't had a decision yet, because it's the DfE's decision. And again, we've had a couple of stories before about how the DfE isn't doing anything without number 10, because it all plays into a bigger sort of COVID response. So I don't know whether that's why we've kind of got this almost bizarre situation where you've got a holding position that's completely untenable now, but remains the position.
Till they're forced into it.
Moving on, and Will, you mentioned exams, which we can't seem to avoid on this podcast. And Catherine, our GCSEs expert, pressure is mounting on the DfE this week, even more as to whether GCSEs and A-levels should go ahead next year. And this is another one from the heads of unions, isn't it? That they've said that you know, GCSEs are going to be very difficult to stage, haven't they?
Yeah. So I mean, this was kind of partly preempted by Qualifications Wales, who have said that you know, they think that common assessments and other forms of continuous assessment should be used instead of exams next year. And then Jeff Barton from Askell said that this did possibly throw the idea of using GCSEs in England as well in 2021 into jeopardy, was the phrase he used. And I think kind of just as we've been saying about Ofsted and about how possible it is for them to operate as normal, kind of similarly, you know, looking at the infection rates around the country and, you know, some areas going into more severe types of lockdown than others, the idea that it's going to be possible to run you know, a full exam series by next summer looks really uncertain. And also there are a lot of concerns, which was where this came from with Qualifications Wales. There's a lot of concerns about how you possibly create a kind of fair and level playing field for students where you know, some may have missed so much more time than others.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't just the Welsh thing, was it? There was pressure from the north of England as well. We ran a story. Sorry, yeah. It wasn't Welsh at all.
Absolutely. So the northern powerhouses, well, also made the same point about running exams next year. And again, it is partly because that that some of the kind of worst affected areas have been in that area of the country. And so it does seem quite implausible that we'll be able to run like a really fair national exam system.
Has anyone got any stats to hand about the amount of schools that have closed in the north compared to those in the south?
One of the things that the Northern Powerhouse Partnership said was that of 23 areas of the country where secondary attendance is below 80%, 17 out of 23 were in the north of England. So three quarters of the worst hit places for COVID, basically. And they also, there was some data out this week about attendance broken down by like local authority level and government region level. And again, it's northwest, northeast, Yorkshire and Humber. They're all higher than anywhere else in the country, much higher than some in southeast and southwest. So it's like Catherine says, there's a massive question mark about how you design a system that's fair when you know that the access to education hasn't been equitable. It's again, it comes back to this thing of trying to cling to normality in a pandemic. When can you?
I mean, they've been quite clear in the people have been speaking up, keep saying the north. Obviously, it's lots of different areas, but who were speaking out on their behalf, and they were saying, scrap exams and bring in continuous assessment and rely on teacher assessment, and saying how it could work. I think for me that just illustrates how intractable it is, because I mean, we did that last year and nobody was happy with the results, were they? I mean, okay, maybe you make teacher assessment slightly more formal, but you're kind of running out of time to do it, aren't you?
Yeah,
I think we do.
Teachers need to be put in
essentially in the same territory of calculated grades that you were this time around.
I think it's not been very kind of in terms of sort of doing continued assessments. There are issues with that, and I think the Welsh arm of ASCOL made that point as well, that if you do switch to continuous assessment, it could be kind of seen as kind of over-egging the pudding a little bit, because, okay, you might think, well, you can't run a fair exam system with this amount of school closures and pupils being off sick, etc. But then how do you also run a series of continuous assessments, which, you know, at the moment we haven't defined what those would look like or how they would take place. So I think that, and as you say, it sort of adds to the burden on teachers who might be just trying to get pupils to catch up at this point as well, rather than kind of introduce a new form of assessment.
And that's before you even get into how do you set the standard, which obviously you did your story on last week. You know, you have to have something to peg it to when deciding where the grades should be. And, you know, should that be last year when everybody got normal, you know, this year, sorry, when everybody got really high grades, or the year before? I think whatever way you're going to do it, it's going to be unfair to some people. So, but again, if they don't do something quickly, then it's just going to get worse, isn't it? In terms of schools now.
Well, yeah, the longer they leave it, the more work they're going to have to do in a quicker space of time.
Yeah,
needs sorting as soon as possible, doesn't it?
You wouldn't want to have to be the one sorting it, though, would you?
You what, sorry?
You wouldn't want to have to be the person sorting it.
Well, you wouldn't. you wouldn't.
Has there been any indication from Ofqual or DfE on consulting on plans? I mean, they're putting the exams back by 3 weeks. That was the latest.
Yeah, and they're consulting on more unspecified measures that they could bring in. What was the word Glenys Stacey used, Catherine? It was optionality.
Optionality, yeah. Right. So kind of, I suppose, having more choice around what pupils have learned and then what questions they can answer.
That should be due fairly soon, shouldn't it? I think we're supposed to be just maybe a few weeks.
They said kind of quite soon. So that should... we should get some kind of confirmation. I think if that is the thing. If we don't know quite soon, then obviously for teachers planning how the year's going to look and how they're going to work out what to teach and when, they really do need to know this as soon as possible. So it's quite important that the kind of the details of that get fleshed out quite soon.
Look, let me move us on to another pressure facing teachers, and that's that. amazingly, they're having to be test and traces as well, even in the school holidays, which isn't supposed to be their job, according to a union, as a union has pointed out. John, is this another one of yours? It seems astonishing that head teachers are having to ring round pupils who've been in the same bubble as somebody who's tested positive in the half-term holidays. Is that right?
Yes, it seems like for schools, this is, as James Bowen from the NAHT said, that head teachers and teachers, school leaders, have basically found themselves inadvertently becoming part of the country's test and trace infrastructure. And I think he basically said, you know, at the start of this, we assumed that we'd raise the alarm and then health bodies would take over what is a health thing. But there's a kind of a gap because test and trace doesn't apply to pupils. And so what's happened, you know, in terms of the app, and whereas schools had thought that this would all be public health responsibility, the work has been doing by school leaders. And everyone spoke to him just as half term started, and that's carried on. So every time we get a positive test within a school, it falls on the head teacher or school leadership team to basically do all of the standing down of the ball and effectively to be track and tracers. And he said, you know, this is kind of an unforeseen consequence. And are we willing for this to carry on? I mean, the phrase is, is this now a 365 day a year responsibility that the heads are going to be sat on Christmas morning with a mobile phone on the lap waiting to do a ring round? And I think it's quite striking. After we did the story, there's quite a lot of comments on Twitter saying, yeah, we're doing that. So it's not just a fear, it's reality this week and for the foreseeable.
It's happening, isn't it? There was like somebody saying, yeah, I made 50 calls this half-term holiday, which must take a lot of time.
Yeah, and they've got to have their seating plans. I saw people on Twitter saying that, you know, they've got to have their up-to-date seating plans there ready, you know, kind of in contact with the SMT of the head teachers are having to do it to find out who they need to be calling. It's not much of a break for some.
Think from the DfE's point of view, their position seems to be that who is better placed to do it, because there's no point getting test and tracers in who don't know who the pupils have had contact with. So therefore, why wouldn't you have teachers and heads doing it? But
I think that's a running theme with a lot of what's been happening recently. This idea that potentially absolutely right that schools and teachers know best in terms of what their pupils need. But actually, in lots of cases, they've said that this just feels like the DfE passing the buck to them on pretty much everything. And it's just another one of those cases where, you know, the reason is given that schools know best. And actually, a lot of them are saying that they need a lot more support.
Mm. It's linked nicely into other extra duties for teachers.
Well, I don't think it links on to what I was going to talk about, because I was going to talk about the fight against COVID in schools, and the irony there is that, and this is our splash on the website this afternoon, that it could be cleaners themselves that are actually spreading the virus, because these are people on quite low pay, relatively low pay, who can't afford to self isolate because in some instances they're not receiving full sick pay from the companies that are contracted to employ them in schools. And this is a story that Unison has flagged up. And Unison, the public service union that represents cleaners and you know, kitchen staff and people like that, it's doing a sort of a trawl around these large contractor companies that work in schools. And any of them that are not paying full sick pay, it's kind of having, I think the plan is to have a word and say, look, you know, can you change your policy? And apparently large MATs are thinking as well that they're going to review contracts of companies that are not doing it. Kind of makes sense, really, because, you know, I think profits sort of have to take a back seat in some circumstances when, you know, you've got a huge pandemic. It just seemed a really important story from Unison with huge public interest, and something that people perhaps aren't thinking about, because, you know, these cleaners and kitchen staff, the kind of the invisible staff in schools that keep the schools running, but they're on extremely low pay.
Much lower pay than teachers, yeah.
You what's that?
I was just saying, much lower pay than teachers, yeah, and in a different financial situation when it comes to to deciding what they have to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see where that one goes. I think they're going to name a few companies, I think, soon. We're putting this list together as we speak. And hopefully we'll get some mats to speak to us that are going to be sort of reviewing contracts in the near future.
It's a great story. The other one, so it doesn't sound too strange from before that I was trying to allude to, was the other story you did, John, about teachers having to clean classrooms.
Yeah, that's something else that's come up with discussions we've had with the unions, that government guidance sort of says when we have lesson changeovers, you have to have a clean between different groups, which makes sense. But that happens a lot in secondary schools. And he said, in an ideal world, we'd have a team of cleaners on hand to do this, but schools don't have the money for that. So what's happening in reality is teachers and pupils are basically been asked at the end of the day to wipe down units and classrooms and things.
Well, it's teaching assistants as well, isn't it? It's teaching assistants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And it's just another example of how COVID has just extended what's expected of the sector massively beyond just education.
Well, look, I'm conscious that we're running out of time here. Can we end it on a sort of a happier note?
Well, some good news, yeah, for school staff, teachers and school staff from the land of supermarkets. I'm sure there'll be others that will be following suit, but the one we know about at the moment, Morrisons, has just announced that they're offering a 10% discount to all teachers and all school staff from Monday until after Christmas. So I've seen lots of reaction to that on Twitter. Got a story up online on that. Teachers just saying thank you so much. This is just really good news, and just something we really need right now. Just working really hard, and it's just nice to be recognised. Because Morrisons have just said, look, you know, we've seen all you're doing to keep kids in school, to keep schools open, to keep the learning going. So here's a gesture we'd like to extend to say thank you, which is a nice sort of bright point in the midst of all the gloom at the moment.
Well, we should also say other supermarkets are available.
Yeah,
to cover.
I'm
our
sure the others will follow suit.
Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you all soon.